but also to our friend Matt Lodi, who is a reporter for the Associated Press out in Cleveland and also the founder of the website NEOSportsInsiders.com. What's going on, Matt Lodi? How are you?
Hey, buddy. Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's been a while since we talked. I know that's going to pick up in frequency as pitchers and catchers report in how many days?
Less than a week. I think it's, Tuesday, Wednesday, somewhere around there. I know the truck
I think
is,
it's the 18th. I think it's exactly a week.
18th? Okay,
yeah.
So it is a week. All right. I know the truck is there, so let's put it that way.
Of course, pitchers and catchers reporting on the 18th. I think the Indians are the 18th. When's the Tigers? Do you know?
I believe it's either the 18th or the 19th, but let me triple check those numbers.
Yeah, you don't have to do it three times. You can just check it once if you want. That's okay. and that's okay. But yeah, anyway, and of course, we're going to talk a lot more as you bring us great baseball coverage as we look forward to the start of the baseball season. But Matt, what we're talking about today, and you wrote about it, and I have it up in front of me right now at NEOSportsInsiders.com. Kobe's final game in Cleveland, LeBron and Kyrie. Can you believe that these two guys have been in the last 9 NBA finals, one or the other, and yet none of them timed up where they could play each other?
You know, and I think that's where, Bob, when you look at the comparison between LeBron and Kobe, it's not going to be held in the same regard as, say, Magic and Larry, or even Jordan and Magic, because these two guys will never have met in an NBA finals. And, you know, since I knew we were going to talk a lot about this today, of course, I did my homework and was looking through some of the different numbers and some of the different research about these two players. And, you know, when you look at Kobe Bryant, 5 NBA championships, LeBron with 2. I think the most interesting number is that Kobe only has 1 MVP while LeBron has 4. I know that it's interesting because back when we were growing up, because we're around the same age, every year it was one of three guys, Bird, Magic, or Jordan. It was pretty much one of those three guys. And when you combine these two guys, legendary players, and Kobe and LeBron, two guys that are going to be held in the highest regard when they retire, and of course Kobe coming up here at the end of this year, only 5 MVPs. Now, of course, that can change with LeBron, but only 5 MVPs, and, you know, obviously between the two of them, you've got some titles there. You know, Kobe again with 5 and LeBron with 2, and obviously for Cavaliers fans, they hope that number increases for LeBron, but I don't think the matchup is going to go down quite under the same lure, if you will, of that Magic and Larry Bird, or again, Magic and Michael Jordan battles did back in the 80s and then, of course, in the 90s, too.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right, and that's what makes it so weird. Like I said, it's not like – I mean, obviously, when Bird and Magic are compared, because they came up together, they literally were drafted as rookies the same year, obviously following
right.
the 79 National Championship showdown that really kind of helped save basketball, as it turns out. And Kobe was already a well-established superstar well into LeBron's rookie season in 2003. So clearly, this is it's not like they're contemporaries in that regard, but their primes crossed over. LeBron coming into his prime as Kobe Bryant was well into his and then headed toward the decline of his prime years. They were at the top of their games. And there was a period of time, 5-6 years ago, I suppose, where there was a hell of a debate nationwide.
Oh, yeah.
Who's better? The Beast of the East, LeBron James, who kind of trends more toward the Magic style of domination, where he can score, but he can assist, he can set guys up, he can see the floor and be that general in the Magic sort of way, versus the best in the West, the Mamba, who was more like Michael, just a cold-blooded assassin, a guy who could score 60 if he wanted to, a guy who could drop 40 on you with his eyes closed, you know, and just had the will to carry his team to win, a guy that you wanted the ball in his hands with the shot clock winding down with the game on the line, versus a guy in LeBron who, if you wanted it in his hands, it was only going to be to see who he's going to find to take the shot, because it wasn't going to be him very often, at least making them. So their primes did cross over quite a bit, and there was that battle about who's the best player in the NBA back in 06, 07, 08, and 09 in that era. So, Matt, as you look back on it now that Kobe's hanging them up, what's the answer in their primes? Who would you take?
You know, the reason I prefer LeBron, and this has nothing to do with him being in Cleveland, is because I like
no nothing
guys.
At all.
No. Honestly, Bob, no. I love Jordan. I still think Jordan is the best of all time, and I know we'll talk about that in a minute. So it has nothing to do with, you know, I mean, you know, and if you want to talk about that, that's like, you know, for Browns fans saying John Elway is the best quarterback ever. You understand. But the reason I go with LeBron is because I think of the versatility. And I also think of the fact that, you know, again, the size. I think it's harder to find a bigger guy of his size, when he is at his best, when he is ripped, he can take guys to the hole. And of course, the game I always remember with LeBron, no matter what, any, you know, the one game I always go back to is the 07 game against Detroit in Detroit. I mean, the way, I don't know if I've ever seen, in watching basketball now for 30 some years, if I've ever seen a player take a game literally over like he did that night. And it wasn't like they were playing the Washington Generals. They were playing the defending Eastern Conference champions. And the way that he single-handedly won that game for the Cavaliers, I'm not saying Kobe couldn't do that in his prime. We saw, like you mentioned, the 90 scoreboard was at 81 against Toronto.
Right.
You know, we've seen Kobe have those moments. But in a pressure situation, Bob, I think LeBron is just a little bit better. And I know that's weird to say because of the amount of championships Kobe has. But, again, look at the supporting cast Kobe had around him out in Los Angeles as compared to, you know, I mean, LeBron was playing with guys like, Larry Hughes and company here in Cleveland. And then, of course, once he did get things straightened out in Miami, they had the big three. He won the two championships. But I think player to player, I think I would go with LeBron just, you know, because of the size and because of the ability that he has at certain times to take over the games. Now, the one thing I will admit, if I'm Kobe, though, there I give Kobe the distinct advantage is what you said just a moment ago, the killer instinct to end games. Like, he makes those winning shots. That's one thing that LeBron James, as you said, has always kind of lacked. I mean, we've seen, you know, we always go back to that one Orlando game where he made the three-pointer at the buzzer that won him game two, I believe it was,
right,
of the, what would that have been, the 07 or 08, somewhere around there. Maybe it was 08 or 09.
It was 09.
Conference finals.
Jim Christian says.
Sorry, go ahead, Jim.
It was. You're thinking the Orlando one. That was 09.
Okay, 09. But other than that shot and even the shot in Chicago last year in the second round, there hasn't been just that overwhelming, you know, highlight film of LeBron with game-winning buzzers like Kobe. You know, Kobe, I mean, there's been a number of them. And that, in that respect, I want the ball in Kobe's hands at the end. But if it's from a start-to-finish career and a start-to-finish game, I'll take LeBron.
And I think that's very fairly argued. I want to go back just for a moment or two and relive the game that you mentioned, which was probably... You know, ironically, he won two championships in Miami. He also lost a couple there.
Right.
But
Dallas and San Antonio, yeah.
Correct. But his best performance might have been in that season when he did not make it to the finals, win the championship, I should say. That game against Detroit, I agree with you, will go down maybe as his greatest virtuoso performance. And it's not just the total of 48. He had 48 points, 9 rebounds, and 7 assists. It's what he did in a double overtime game by scoring their final 25 and 29 of their last 30. I mean, it's like literally 1 against 5. You know, Drew Gooden is running around out there, and I don't even know who else he had on that thing anymore.
Was it Donyell Marshall, maybe? Yeah,
maybe Donyell, Eric Snow.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Trajan Langdon, maybe? I don't even – I mean, I think that was – obviously, Booby Gibson was on that team because he won – you know, he kind of took over game 6 back in Cleveland. That ended up winning them that series. But I'm telling you, Bob, when you watch that game or if you've seen highlights of that game or you remember that game, all I remember, I was at an Indians, covering the Indians that night. All I remember from watching that game in the press box, because the overtime and I believe the double overtime took place after we got done with the locker room, was every possession was LeBron. Every possession. It wasn't even, it's like when you know a guy's going to, you know, a running back's going to get the ball, you can't stop him, you know, like Earl Campbell or something like that, you know, Barry Sanders. That's what it was like, and as I said earlier, it wasn't like they were playing a bad team. It wasn't like they were playing an 11-win Lakers team like last night. They were playing a team that still had a semblance, some semblance, if you will, of an NBA contender as far as finals are concerned, and they were playing a very physical Detroit team that still had some big boys in there, the Ben Wallaces of the world and the, you know, Chauncey Billups and company. I mean, they were still a pretty good basketball team. So he did it against one of the better teams in the league. That to me was the most impressive thing about that performance. Is they didn't do it. He didn't do it against schlubs. He did it against a very good basketball team.
A great basketball team in their place, and that's what made it so amazing up at the Palace. And what we saw, like I said, was virtually 1-on-5. And I guess I couldn't say that Kobe Bryant couldn't do that. Because we've seen him. We've seen him put up 60-point games, the 81-point game, where he did score X amount of points in a row. Because he was such a phenomenal. And see, here's the thing that made LeBron that day dare I say, more Kobe-like. It was mixed up. The windmill slams, and he had like three of them in that fourth quarter with his outside shot that was on that night. And that was always, and still to this day, is LeBron James' Achilles heel, is that outside shot, especially when he falls in love with it and it isn't hitting. And far too often it isn't. If you look at his outside shooting, you know, percentages this year, anything outside the paint or certainly outside the three. But that night he was shooting lights out from everywhere, and that's what Kobe Bryant has done on such a more of a regular basis. So I think, you know, could we? Here's the best way to say it. I think what LeBron James did that night was to me Kobe-esque. It was Michael-esque,
right.
And those were the two best scorers ever, and that was his scoring virtuoso performance.
Yeah, and you know, and again, and knowing we were going to discuss this, I wanted to look at statistics in terms of, you know, regular season numbers and everything. And when you look at it, LeBron has a slight advantage in points per game, 27.2 to 25.1, more rebounds, 5.3 to 7.1, more assists, more steals, and actually more blocks. So, you know, I don't, certainly, again, I'm not going to say throw that means he's the overall better player. I don't know if it's a fair comparison or not. But, I mean, just numbers-wise, LeBron, and maybe again, Bob, because he hasn't played with the Shaquille O'Neals in his prime and players of that nature,
right.
He's had to play with guys on the back ends of their careers, or a Larry Hughes, who was, as we always remember, was supposed to be the Robin to the LeBron's Batman, and that turned out to be a disaster. He's always played with these, I don't know, second-tier players, where Kobe had the luxury at times of playing with stars in their prime. And I always, of course, go back to Shaquille O'Neal, leaving Orlando to go to Los Angeles. I think if it would be interesting, and I know, well, you know, hindsight being what it is, and you talk about these type of scenarios, it would be interesting to see where Kobe would have ended up if Shaquille would not have gone to Los Angeles, how his numbers would have translated, and how many championships he would have won if he wouldn't have had the luxury of the big guy in the middle there.
Well, you know, and the irony about that, Matt, is you could play the same game. If Shaquille O'Neal and Kobe Bryant had not had their issues and split up, they could have won.
Yeah, good call.
They won three in a row. They could have won four, five, maybe six in a row. I'm looking back at that time. I don't see anybody that could have beaten them had they decided to put their issues aside. We could be talking about a guy, Kobe Bryant, who has five, who very well could have eclipsed Michael Jordan's six with seven or eight. And now we're talking about a whole different ball game. About points and stats and everything else, and you'd say, well, you know, hey, Michael had his Scotty, who's an all-time NBA player, a top 25, 30, 40 guy, whatever ranking you're looking at, and you know, and seven championships and all of the rest of the accolades with all-stars and first-team all-defense and blah, blah, blah. You could be talking about Kobe as being, forget about comparison to LeBron James, but comparison with Michael Jordan as maybe being the greatest player of all time.
Yeah, that's a great point, Bob. And again, you always need some sort of supporting cast. I mean, nobody, I don't think in the history of the NBA, even those Celtics teams of the 70s and the 60s and now into the 80s, then when Bird was there and McHale and, you know, Parrish and those guys, they all had a supporting cast. And again, Kobe, I think, just had the luxury of having that stronger supporting cast. But your original point, looking back at those Laker teams, those three Laker teams with Shaquille and with Kobe together, you're right. Those teams were so good. And just those two guys on the floor together, with Kobe in his prime and Shaquille basically in his prime, I don't remember very many teams hanging with them. I really don't. And that doesn't say they didn't lose some games, but, you know, every team's going to lose a few. But I think that team, that was one of the dominant teams that doesn't get talked about enough. Everybody looks back at the 96 Bulls. Everybody looks back now at this year's Golden State team. But those 3 years of Laker teams were just incredibly good. They had some other guys there, of course, but really it came down to if Kobe and Shaquille were playing well, nobody was going to beat those teams.
No. I mean, you talk about three-peats, and it could very well have continued on like that, and that's an amazing thing. All right. So, Matt, that brings – we're talking to Matt Lodi, NEOSportsInsiders.com. Take a look at his website there, and also he is a reporter for the Associated Press, broadcast reporter in Cleveland. Last night in Cleveland, of course, it was Kobe and LeBron. So we've milked that comparison for all it's worth. Let's talk about ESPN now. ESPN has their top 100 players of all time out. And we can certainly find issues with various points in this list in the top 10. I think people could. For those who haven't heard it yet, just to give you your... In fact, I'll give you the top 12 so we can include Kobe Bryant's name. Kobe Bryant is just 12th on this list. third all-time leading scorer, five championships, I don't know, 12, I think, first-team all-defensive NBA, all of the accolades that he has gotten. He's 12th. He trails 11 Oscar Robinson, Robertson, 10 Hakeem Olajuwon, 9 Shaq, 8 Tim Duncan, 7 Bill Russell, 6 Larry Bird, 5 Wilt Chamberlain, 4 Magic Johnson, 3 LeBron James, 2 Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and 1, of course, is Michael Jordan. We can debate and tear some things like that, and Kush, don't be shy. You can be a part of this, too. We can tear some of that stuff apart. But on an overall macro level, Matt, I wanted to bring this up. How are they put? And by the way, the highest Piston on this list, unless I missed something, is Isaiah at number 26. Isaiah Thomas is number 26, which is a crime in its own right because it's three spots behind Steph Curry.
Right.
He should not be anywhere near the
not
top
even
50
close.
On this list. The top
not
50,
yet.
Top 60. And I, the macro level I was going to bring up here, I used Curry as an example there. I just think lists like this, especially when they're put together by properties like ESPN, and we are ESPN Radio 106.5 The Ticket, so I'm not trying to disparage anybody, but they are in business with the NBA, today's NBA. They're broadcasting their games. They're putting them on SportsCenter, and I think there's a vested interest in saying that these guys are the greatest of all time. So many of these guys that are active right now are the greatest of all time. And I just think it's completely ridiculous that Kevin Durant, as much as I love him, and I think he is a tremendous, transcendent type of talent, 22nd best player of all time. He has not won a title. Not that that's the be-all, end-all. Charles Barkley is number 18, and he hasn't won a title either. It's not the be-all, end-all, but there's Kevin Durant at 22. Steph Curry is at 23. Just to throw, again, some current names out there. Chris Paul, and I love Chris Paul, one of the best point guards in the league. The 29th greatest player of all time over Steve Nash, a two-time MVP, by the way, just as a just position for position. Carmelo Anthony, Matt, is the 59th greatest player to put on a pair of sneakers and play in the NBA, who has done nothing in his life. Is Pau Gasol the 56th best player of all time? Is Pau Gasol better at this game than Adrian Dantley was? And I'm just looking at guys who play his position. We could argue if we go outside of position, forget about it. Is Pau Gasol better than Alonzo Mourning was? Is Pau Gasol better than David Thompson was at this game? So you go up and down this list, and I'm just seeing all of these names that I think we're prisoners of today. We see them today, and they're great today. Therefore, they must be some of the greatest of all time, and I just think it's a load of crap. Go ahead.
Well, it's funny because I started going through this list again when I knew we were going to discuss this. And you know what made me almost laugh the most is, did you see who 99 and 100 are?
Number 100 is Sean Kemp.
Which is comical. I mean,
and
come
number
on.
Number 99 is
Kevin Love.
K-Love. I mean, is he the 99th best player in the history of this game?
Yeah. I mean, he's a three-time All-Star, a two-time All-NBA selection. He was the most improved player. Never won a championship, 18-5 a game, 11 rebounds. I mean, seriously, ahead of guys like, you know, I'd have to really go through this list. But, you know, if you look at 99 through 100, Marc Gasol, really, at 95? I mean, would you ever think Marc Gasol, when you think the best players in the history of the NBA, Marc Gasol? And the one comparison I have to this is back in 97, when the NBA had their All-Star game here in Cleveland, we had the luxury of that year of having the 50 greatest of all time on the court at once.
Right.
The only two guys that didn't show up, and I tell this story all the time, is one was Pistol Pete Maravich, who had passed away already. He was one. The other one who didn't show up was, oddly enough, Shaquille O'Neal, because he was off shooting Shazam. That's why he couldn't show up to the All-Star festivities
you,
that week.
Cousin,
you know that?
Was it a cousin?
Or whatever. You know that Academy Award winner that you probably still own on DVD
yeah,
to this day,
one.
A Kazam or Kablam? Those were the only two that showed up. And I remember that weekend, Bob, we all kind of convened on Friday. I was doing some network work for AP and some other networks. And I remember we all met up at like the Marriott or one of the hotels downtown Cleveland, and just walking around and talking to some of these guys And just, of course, you see the battle scars, and, you know, it's not like the NFL where these guys are, you know, a lot of these guys still had some semblance of being able to move around. But, you know, you look around, you go, wow, I'll never have this in my life again where I'll be in this room with these 50 greatest. But then I see this list, and I'm like, Marc Gasol? Kevin Love? Like, I know that that's 50 added on to the 50 that were there that day, per se. But I just don't think of these guys as the golden age of basketball. You know, I just don't. I have a hard time with it. You know, Mark Price at 94, you know, we love Mark Price because of what he represented here in Cleveland during those 1980s and 90s seasons when, you know, they were fighting the Bulls. But real Mark Price, I mean, never won a championship. I don't know. Everything is subjective, and we know that.
And obviously, when you say that it's, you know, he hasn't won a championship, and people need to, and I'm sure they do, and will talk about what that means. It's not as though you have to win a championship to be an all-time
great. No.
I mean, for example.
No, look at Dan Marino. I mean,
I'll just stay in this sport. But I mean,
I hear you.
Look at Charles Barkley. Barkley was one of the most ridiculously talented players, and one of the most amazing overachievers, being a 6'4" or under power forward in the NBA, going against 6'8", 6'9", 6'10 guys, and leading the league in rebounding for I don't know how many years with 13, 14, 15 freaking rebounds a game, and being the offensive force that he was, I don't need to see his fingers to say, oh, those are bare, to know that he is one of the greatest players ever. And I think he might be ranked too low at 18. I'll tell you another one. Patrick Ewing was one of the greatest players in the history of this game. They've got him down at number 32, okay?
Yeah.
They've got one of his nemesis. You've got to figure that out. Akeem at number 10. Now, what's the difference between Patrick Ewing and Akeem Olajuwon? Patrick Ewing played in the East, where you had to deal with Michael Jordan for all those years. You had to deal with the best of the best. Akeem played in the West, and once Jordan left, Akeem Olajuwon and the Rockets, Akeem had what? Clyde Drexler, another all-timer, Hall of Famer. Patrick Ewing had John Starks. That was his best number two option. Patrick Ewing was so good, he carried the city of New York on his back when he was that number one pick in the first ever lottery in 85. And he did some ridiculously good things that had there not been for Jordan, he's wearing rings. And had they gotten him a Drexler instead of a Starks as his sidekick, he's wearing rings. He's down there at number 32. And yet guys like Kevin Garnett. Now, Kevin Garnett, I know some people are going to say, is an all-time great. To me, Kevin Garnett was a product of exactly what we just said. He's at number 21. He's a guy, when he was the guy, and there wasn't much around him, squat in Minnesota. He goes and becomes part of a big three, and I'm so sick of that overused phrase, in Boston, and wins a championship.
They win a title, right.
Right. So it's not about just championships, because some of these guys are just victims of their circumstances and where they were. Their greatness cannot be questioned. And conversely, take a look at Bill Russell, who's the ultimate champion.
Oh, yeah, of course.
With 11, yeah. Who's only down there at number 7, two spots behind Wilt, who won it only twice. But Wilt's statistics were so ridiculously dominant that you have to factor all of those things into a list like this.
Well, I mean, I guess, again, being the hindsight, playing the what-if game, I mean, let's just call it like it is. If LeBron doesn't go to Miami, is he 3? Because, you know, there's a realistic chance then, Bob, he doesn't have any championships.
Based
on, unfortunately, the bad luck that seems to happen up here in Cleveland, does he get held in this high regard? Now, his numbers are great, and, you know, we kind of read him off a little while ago against Kobe's, but at the same time, if he doesn't go to Miami and quote-unquote sell out, like a lot of people say that he did, just like a Garnett did, or like a Dwayne Wade, not necessarily Dwayne Wade, but a Chris Bosh may have, right. And he's on the list. I saw him up there, too.
Well,
I think
Wade would have, too, by the way, and that's important to point out. Wade would have, too. If they hadn't all come there, he would have gone someplace else.
He would have gone somewhere else,
so
right?
He's just as guilty.
And, yeah, but my point is, like, you know, does LeBron get held at 3, or would he be more like 11 and maybe Kobe be in the top 5, you know, because, again, titles do mean a lot. I mean, we equate a lot of things in sports to titles, and sometimes it's fair, sometimes it's not. You know, I don't know if, you know, like I said earlier, I don't know if some of these guys are held in as high of a regard if they don't have the titles. I look at a guy like Wilt Chamberlain, there's just no guy. You can never tell me Will Chamberlain wasn't one of the greatest players of all time. I don't care if he's got 30 rings or one ring. I mean, just looking at his numbers, and of course, you know, obviously a lot of people always look back and talk about the 100-point game, but it was more than that. He was the NBA for a while.
It was every night, Matt. You know, that's the thing. It was every night. You know, Steph Curry had 51 the other night, right? Curry had 51 points the other night? People went crazy. People went crazy. Oh, my God, Curry's got 36 at the half. Oh, my God, Steph explodes for 51. Last year, Kyrie Irving had a 55 and a 57. And people are like, oh, my God. Chamberlain averaged that.
Every night.
For an entire season, 50.4 points per game. And I do not care. I don't care what anybody says. That 50 along with 23 or 24 rebounds a game, I don't care how many other seven-footers there were. I don't care how many other what teams were trying to do. They changed the game to try to stop that guy because of everything that he did. He's number five on that list? No. To me, he can't be any lower than three. And that would only be behind, and the reason I would give Kareem the nod over him is, again, now where do we balance career stats and dominance versus championships? Kareem being a six-time champion, it means a lot. The fact that he won six and is the all-time scoring leader, I take both those things together. I'll give him the nod over Wilt, who is the all-time single-season scoring leader and only has the two rings, just based on that difference in championships, the disparity. And then, of course, you get to Russell, who's sitting there at seven going, wait, what about my 11? Well, 15 points a game. And 22 rebounds. Yeah. You know, you were spectacular in one regard, but surrounded by Hall of Famers all over the rest of that lineup, that's got to be
a coach,
consideration.
A Hall of Fame coach.
Yeah, when you talk about those 11 championships.
Well, you know, I'll give you two phrases as to why Will Chamberlain is not the number one guy on the list or number two after Jordan. ESPN and Twitter. If Will Chamberlain played today, Bob, it would be out of this world. I mean, and even Michael Jordan, if he played today, it would be different because now Jordan did have the luxury, I guess, if you will, of the NBA being a hot property by the time he came in. But let's not forget, Will Chamberlain played at a time when NBA Finals games were played in tape delay. You know what I mean? It's not like the NBA had that stretch there, as we know, where, you know, it wasn't the game that it is today. And I think that some of these older players, like a Bobby Jones or, you know, a Nate Thurmond who's on the list, Lenny Wilkins, who I saw on the list, are not as held in high as regard because, A, you didn't have the social media aspect of it like you do today where, you know, when Steph Curry's going off for 51 points, he's the number one trend worldwide on Twitter. And number two, there was no cable networks. There wasn't a chance to see these guys. If you were lucky, maybe you saw Chamberlain two times a year as compared to seeing him on a nightly basis like you can right now.
Let's put it this way. There's no video of the 100-point game.
Exactly. That's all that needs to be said. Where the 81-point game, which was already, what, 9 years ago, 8 years ago, you could still see that pretty much in its entirety, probably on YouTube, or you could find a way to see it. You know, let's just put it that way. So it is a different – it's because of the time frame, it's just different. And I think we tend to forget, we do this in all the sports, baseball, football, basketball, whatever it is, we tend to forget how good the guys of the past eras were because all we think about are the guys today because they're being thrown at us 24/7.
All right, so Matt, let me ask you this then, just regarding the top five. You said a moment ago, if LeBron doesn't go to Miami, is he at number three? The answer is no, of course not. And to be quite honest with you, I don't think he belongs at number three right now. Any more than I think Steph Curry belongs anywhere near the top 50, and that's not bagging on Curry. I have declared him, not that I'm the only one, the GOAT. Well, not the GOAT. That's greatest of all time. The greatest of right now. I think he's the best player on the planet. I think he has eclipsed LeBron James, as LeBron is what it is. Steph Curry has taken it to another level. His scoring explosion this year, his increased scoring performance of 6.5 points a game higher than what he had last year is the highest increase in scoring from a defending MVP in history. His numbers are so outlandish, and their record because of him is so outlandish. It's unreal. But he has been this player, Matt, for a year and a half. That's
right.
Prior to last year and then this year, he was just a dude. You know, maybe a riser, you know, but he was just a player. A couple of years ago, they were trying to decide, you know, or 3 years ago, 4 years ago, whatever it was, when they traded Monte Ellis, do we trade Ellis or trade Curry? Because we kind of can't have them both. So you know, he's been this guy for a year and a half, and they're crowning him 23rd best player of all time. Play a decade at this level. Play 8 or 9 years at this level. Then we'll talk about where you are all time. I think it's ridiculous, and I also think it's ridiculous that LeBron, in year, what, 13, he's got 12 years in, can be the number three player of all time over Magic Johnson with his two titles. He's still writing his story. LeBron's story is not over yet, but he's ranked above Bird. He's ranked above Duncan with his five. He's ranked above Kobe. I just don't see that yet. There is time, you know, 10 years from now, we'll look back at the story of LeBron James, see the rings, see the final scoring totals, see the final output in all of the other categories that mean so much to statisticians who look at LeBron James all-around game the way we have forever at Magic Johnson's game. Then we'll talk about this. But to say third best player of all time, you're telling me if he retires right now, his two titles – and the numbers being what they are the third best performance in the history of this game. If he retires right now, doesn't score another point, please. You cannot do that to those legends.
I think, Bob, when you look at LeBron, I think a fair number for LeBron, and I'm talking if you're going to hold him in the regard that he's being held in, is probably somewhere around 9 or 10. I mean, that's hard for me to say because we just started our interview talking about, you know, the comparison between Kobe and LeBron. And what is Kobe again? 11, I believe you said?
12.
So, 12. All right. Well, maybe he's right there with Kobe at 11 or 12. Because, again, I always ask myself this question. If I had to start a franchise today, which one of these guys would I choose in what order? And there is no doubt Michael is one. And there is no doubt Kareem is two. But
see, now, is
what
there?
I think,
see, you know what? Boy, Matt.
Chamberlain at two?
No. I was going to say about one. Would it be Mike? Because, Kareem was such a difference maker. You got to understand what he was coming out of Power Memorial High School and coming out of UCLA. He was the most dominant force the game had seen since Wilt. In 72, when he was with the Bucks, I think it was, I mean, this is a 7'3" guy. Doing things that Michael Jordan was doing, I mean, not in the same way, obviously, with his dunks and the tongue out and everything, but dominating the game and leading his team to championships before Mike was ever Mike, and Mike was 6'6". If you're starting a team now, you know what's interesting, Matt? The game has changed so much right now that the word center has disappeared from the All-Star ballot, as you know. It's just front court
and
back court.
Yeah.
But yet, if we're looking at this in an all-time context, look at the top 10. Of the top 10, I think six of them are centers.
I was going to say.
Kareem,
yep.
Wilt, Russell, Shaq, and Hakeem. Five.
Yeah.
Five of the 10 are centers, and that's a position that we've devalued. But if you're looking at this from an all-time standpoint, if you're looking at the game the way the game has always been played, everybody takes the biggest best player before they take the smaller best player. So I don't think it's even a given. You know, that Mike would be the first pick. It might be Kareem and it might be Wilt.
Yeah, that's, you know, and again, I go back to Chamberlain just because of what we talked about a little bit earlier with him and how influential he was.
No, that's why Portland took Sam Bowie.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Why Portland took Sam Bowie over Mike.
Well, and you brought up a name earlier. I mean, was there any question that the New York Knicks were going to take Patrick Ewing in 84, I mean, or 85? I mean, it was just, you know, how about the Cavs when they took Brad Doherty? You know, the big men, and that's why I even kind of brought out earlier when we talked about Kobe and LeBron, that's why I sort of prefer LeBron because of his size. I just think as a bigger guy, I know he's only playing in the three or the four sometimes, but as a bigger guy, I'd rather have him than a point guard or a guard, period, a shooting guard, because I feel like they're easier to find. I just do.
Yeah.
When it comes to drafting players. So, you know, I don't know, Bob. I go back and Jordan
when Houston already had Ralph freaking Sampson, and they had
and they went and got Hakeem. Yeah,
you know what? We already got a stud All World center. Let's get another one. And when the Spurs had David Robinson, we already got a stud All World center. Let's get another one. I mean, there's no doubt that teams have forever chosen size and skill over, you know, smaller guys who have skill. So, you know, if we're starting a franchise right now, it's hard to do, and we could argue and discuss this for 10 more hours, but we're out of time. But I think I think it's premature to put LeBron up there at three. I think he's got to be behind Kobe until he has his Kobe's 20 years. Put LeBron's 20 against Kobe's 20, that very well may change. But right now where it is, yeah, I don't think you can do that. Steph Curry, Kevin Durant at 22 and 23 all-time, Kevin Garnett at 21 all-time. I don't see it. Chris Paul at 29 all-time, Dirk Nowitzki at 17 all-time. I think we got a lot of problems on that list, and I'm glad ESPN did it because it gave us something to chew on, which is what.
Yeah, it's a great debate, and even laughing about what we said earlier, Kevin Love at 99. Yeah. I mean, you know, again,
reading.
As much as I like Kevin Love, I mean, let's just be realistic, Bob. I mean, there's a lot of good players out in the NBA, and there has been for the last 50, 60 years. I don't know if I put Kevin Love in as one of the top, you know, the 99th best of all time.
It's hard
for me
and again,
to go there.
Maybe when he plays 15, 18 years, we'll look back and say, dang, look at dude's numbers, look where he is. He's got a couple of rings with LeBron. Maybe that's a conversation piece, but not right now. I completely agree. I look forward to reading your analysis on NAOSportsInsider.com of this list. I know you're going to go back and write one right now, aren't you?
I'm heading right in to do it, Bob, but I appreciate the time as always. Thanks so much, buddy.
Thank you, Matt. Matt Lodi, AP reporter in Cleveland, also the founder of NEOSportsInsiders.com.